We are examining America's complex and often opaque parole system through the story of one man, convicted murderer Jacob Wideman. He is at the center of a new series, Violation, from WBUR and the Marshall Project. This week, reporter Beth Schwartz-Apfel picks up the story. Jake is now out on parole, able to see his wife Martha after 30 years behind bars. But the victim's family and the Arizona Department of Corrections are keeping a close eye on his every move.
In June of 2017, Jake had been out of prison 7 months. He completed all of his required sessions at the Corrections Department's mental health provider, which everyone calls CHC, and his parole officer asked him to contact Dr. McCain to set up an appointment for therapy. Dr. McCain, you might remember, is the therapist Jake told the board about, who he met while he was still locked up. And Jake did. A few days later, Jake sent McCain an email saying he, quote, would very much like to resume a counseling relationship. Soon, McCain replied, asking about Jake's insurance coverage. He provided his phone number and encouraged Jake to leave a message if he didn't answer. But Jake didn't have health insurance, and he told his parole officer he was concerned about paying for the sessions out of pocket.
You know, I was paying for apartment and all the associated expenses. Martha was using, was deep into her savings and just trying to continue to pay for her home and to support the kids and support herself and that kind of thing.
Jake's father had paid for McCain's sessions while Jake was in prison. But now that he finally had a job, it was important to Jake to begin supporting himself financially, he said.
My family had been unbelievably supportive. They had literally spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on my legal defense over the years. They were getting older. They were both retired. I didn't want to continue to be a financial burden to them, though they would have never phrased it as a burden. I wanted to be independent.
The other issue is Jake's job, the customer service job that he was really enjoying, was more than an hour from Dr. McCain's office via public transportation, and his boss said he couldn't leave for hours in the middle of the day. Remember how hard it had been for Jake to get this job? And remember all of those parole conditions? One of them was to seek, obtain, and maintain employment, which is to say he could be sent back to prison if he lost his job. So Jake asked Pogue, the new parole officer he was assigned to after his parole board check-in, if he could go back to CHC. That was the mental health contractor he had gone to after he got out. It would be free, and he could go on the weekends, so it wouldn't interfere with work. And Pogue said he'd look into it. Pogue's records include several conversations over the course of weeks when he told Jake he would talk to his supervisors about whether CHC was an option. But this was not true, according to Pogue's supervisor. The department had already decided not to let Jake go back to CHC. The supervisor, Holly Dorman, admitted this later when she was cross-examined by Jake's lawyer.
When did you make the decision that CHC was not going to be possible for Mr. Wideman? When was that decision made?
Immediately.
Immediately?
Upon his completion of CHC, that was not ever an option.
And why did you permit Mr. Pogue to tell Mr. Wideman that he was looking into whether CHC was an option?
It is commonplace for our officers to be evasive.
It is commonplace for our officers to be evasive or vague about answers in order to prevent absconding and to continue to protect the public, Dorman says there. So Mr. Pogue would say, I'll check with my supervisor or I'll look into it. It's a tactic and a method for our officers to maintain safety for themselves. What Holly is saying there is the department had decided that Jake couldn't go to CHC, but they had also decided not to tell him that. As far as Jake knew, he was still waiting to hear about CHC, but his parole officer wanted him to call Dr. McCain anyway. One Monday in the middle of July, Jake told Pogue he would call Dr. McCain, and Pogue told Jake to call him by the next day and let him know when he set up the appointment, according to Pogue's notes. So Jake called Dr. McCain's office that next day, twice. The calls are on his phone bill. Dr. McCain didn't answer, so Jake left a message. He then called Pogue to let him know. This may sound like a lot of back and forth about something that for most of us is a minor annoyance. I mean, how many phone calls have you made to doctor's offices and insurance companies? Jake didn't know it, but whether or not he made this one appointment with Dr. McCain, and quickly, could determine if he spent the rest of his life in prison. According to Jake and his lawyers in legal filings, when he called Pogue to tell him he'd left a message for Dr. McCain, Pogue's answer was, "Perfect." But according to Pogue, what he said was this, and I'm reading from his notes here, "The offender was directed to schedule an intake/assessment by Tuesday, 7/18/17, that same day." In court papers, Jake's lawyers argue their intent was to deliberately deceive and mislead Mr. Weidman at every stage of the discussions about counseling. This is his attorney, Patty Guerin, at a board hearing later.
"They all knew CHC wasn't going to work."
They all knew CHC wasn't going to work, and they made a group decision not to tell him, Patty said there. And they didn't tell him, probably knowing the effect that would have on him, that he'd keep hoping that CHC would work and not work quite as hard to get a hold of Dr. McCain because he believed they were working on CHC. Over the next few days, while Jake was waiting for a call back from McCain, an attorney named Daniel Strzok got a letter from the corrections department. Strzok is a partner at a private law firm in Phoenix. Now, the Department of Corrections has its own in-house team of lawyers, but occasionally, in especially large or complex cases, they turn to Dan Strzok's law firm. For example, Strzok is the department's lead lawyer in a decade-long class action lawsuit involving the prison system's massive, dysfunctional medical system. The issue of Jake's home arrest was hardly large or complex, but the department hired Strzok at a rate of $235 an hour to take it on. Several people, including several former board members, told me they'd never heard of the department using lawyers at all for a potential parole violation, let alone a private lawyer. "Dear Mr. Strzok," the letter says,
"pursuant to the agreement for outside counsel between your firm and the state of Arizona, you are appointed to serve as outside counsel to the Arizona Department of Corrections. ADC Community Corrections officers will be arresting, within the next 48 hours, an inmate on home arrest."
Meantime, Dr. McCain did not even know yet that Jake had called him. He testified later that no one checks his voicemail except him, and he hadn't been in the office much that week.
"Here's what nobody knows except me, that I gave Mr. Weidman a direct extension to my office at my desk, which means when he called that number, either I would answer the phone or no one would answer. That's because of privacy."
Pogue drew up a warrant for Jake's arrest. The arrest warrant said he has violated the conditions of his supervision and has lapsed or is probably about to lapse into criminal ways or company. That's what the law requires the department to show if they're going to accuse someone of violating their parole and bring them back to prison. Not just that they have violated one of the dozens of conditions they agreed to when they got out, but also that they have lapsed or are about to lapse into criminal ways or company. The proof Pogue lists on the warrant is that Jake failed to follow the directive of his parole officer to schedule an intake appointment with Dr. McCain. That is to say, he called Dr. McCain, but he didn't receive a call back in time, and therefore he was a danger to the community. They brought Jake back to prison because he didn't make an appointment on that particular day.
"Miss Gary, let me just interrupt, because his violation is not that he refused to go to counseling. His violation was that he did not make the appointment.
This is parole board member Michael Johnson talking to Jake's lawyer, Patty Guerin, at a hearing later.
"He attempted to make an appointment."
"Okay, that's the violation. That's the violation."
And so, here's Patty at that same hearing.
It does amount
to a setup, to a gotcha, Patty says there. You're sitting here waiting for us to tell you about CHC. She means the department's mental health contractor.
You need to make an appointment on this one specific day.
And you're waiting for Dr. McCain to call you back, and so, okay, you didn't make an appointment on this one specific day that we told you to. You're under arrest.
Reporter Beth Schwartz-Apfel in an excerpt of the new podcast series Violation from WBUR and the Marshall Project. Next week, Jake is sent back to prison for violating parole. Will he be there for life? Full episodes of Violation appear every Friday in our podcast Here and Now Anytime. Find it, download it, wherever you listen.